The content contained in the following Inclusive Ed podcast is provided only for educational and informational purposes. Copying, selling, distributing, storing, or any similar action with the content from the Inclusive Ed podcast is expressly prohibited without prior written permission from Quality Schools International Foundation. For permission or further information, please contact a QSI Learning Support Coordinator.
Welcome to Inclusive Ed, a podcast for educators who are looking to support all students in their classrooms, including those with learning differences.
The QSI Regional Learning Support Coordinators, Kelly, Elizabeth, and Kareem, are your hosts. We hope you find the following interview helpful and relevant to your classroom.
It's time to get started. Let's hear from our expert guest for the month.
Welcome to the Inclusive Ed Podcast with Carla Compton.
Today, we are excited to welcome Carla Compton to the Inclusive Ed Podcast, who is a speech-language pathologist. She is the owner of International Speech Path and provides telespeech therapy to students around the world. Prior to becoming a speech-language pathologist, Carla worked in Thailand teaching elementary and novice Buddhist monks English. Having no experience with the Thai language and working with coworkers with no experience with the English language provided Carla with unique opportunities to live and navigate resources in a foreign country. This experience pushed her to pursue her ESL teaching certificate from Duke University's Continuing Education Office and earn her master's degree in communication disorders, becoming a certified speech-language pathologist in North Carolina. Carla currently serves students in over half a dozen countries. Thank you for joining us today, Carla.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Carla, could you please start out with how you ended up where you are today in education and what you love most about it?
Yes, absolutely. As a speech therapist, I do love to talk, so I'm going to try to keep my answers nice and short. My journey actually started as a speech therapist at an inclusive preschool run by therapists. So I became a teacher, tying in my clinical skills into the curriculum. And I loved it because it taught me what teachers experience when they are working with a group of students who learn and function differently. But as my own family grew, I now have two sons, my interests also grew. I wanted to reach students who didn't have access to therapy. And by working with students in different time zones, it allows me the opportunity to spend more time with my sons, which is a priority that came out of lockdown during the pandemic. There are so many things that I love about what I'm doing right now, that it's really hard to choose what I love most, but I think I do love that, I get to learn from a whole bunch of different educators around the world through their own experiences and how to include children who learn differently, in curriculum in a variety of different schools and settings.
Carla, regarding preschool students, can you talk about relative negative behaviors and how that can relate to a language delay or disorder?
Yes, and I love this question because it came up every time at our weekly staff meeting at the preschool that I worked at. And at times we were having these meetings to problem solve because we were frustrated and exhausted. And I give kudos to every teacher out there. It's one of the most challenging parts of the job to deal with quote unquote behaviors. But then I started to learn more about that word behavior. And it usually has such a negative emotion attached to it that puts us more in a judgmental headspace versus an empathetic headspace. So instead of identifying behaviors, I would love it if we as educators and as teams for kids and parents would change our view to identifying symptoms as more of an imbalance that a child may be feeling, especially with our younger kids. So a very common symptom, I'll call it a symptom, we will see in children with language disorders or delays are anger outbursts. These may be really physical, and they might be physical with other people or with objects. They may scream or cry more than others. And the real question and immediate adult reaction should be to help that child regulate what's happening internally, and then problem solve to identify what caused that child to react in that way, versus we're going to pull them out and put them in timeout, or kind of shame them in front of their peers. Like, Johnny is sitting very nicely right now. Alex, I need you to be sitting like Johnny. And from my perspective, this typically comes from a place that the child has been repeatedly misunderstood by many people over the course of the day. And they're either trying to get that message across that's within them, like, hey, stop what you're doing and notice me. No one gets me. This is the only time you understand me is when I'm throwing things or biting people or screaming. Or they simply can't regulate their emotions. They can't regulate being sad or disappointed or frustrated or angry over not being understood. So I think coming in with that perspective of behaviors, especially with kids with language disorders or delays, is extremely important. And also to be aware that kids with language disorders or delays usually have a sensory component, a sensory regulation component that is not necessarily diagnosed, and maybe is not as overt as somebody with diagnosed with autism, but it is there and it is co-occurring. And on top of that, the child might be a highly sensitive person, and highly sensitive people, their sensory systems are going to reach a threshold much faster than other people. So the noise of the lights overhead can immediately trigger them as soon as they walk in the door, and they don't show it. But then as soon as their neighbor, you know, they're sitting next to, starts tapping their pencil, that could be the next thing that sets them off. So there's all these small, minute things that we don't necessarily notice that that child might be noticing, triggering behaviors that are disruptive to the class. So coming at it with some empathy and understanding of their baseline, I think is super crucial with kids with language disorders and delays.
Thank you. And to follow up with this, what are some characteristics of speech and language delays or disorders that parents and teachers should be aware of? And what are the next steps after identification?
Yeah, that's another good question, because early intervention is key. And identifying red flags is so important, and they truly go beyond the basics. And a basic would be Susie's not talking. You know, a five-year-old not talking is obviously a red flag. But red flags change with age. So Susie might have been talking in complete sentences at 4 years old. But as she gets into the fourth grade, she might start to struggle with different subjects. And parents might think she just needs a tutor, when in fact, it might be a language disorder that has just not revealed itself until some of the higher functioning skills are required. So I think for the sake of time, I really want to focus on those skills called the executive functioning skills. And these are the higher level cognitive skills that allow us to plan, predict, identify problems, and then problem solve. And kids who are really struggling with executive functioning could appear as if they have ADHD or are spacey or disorganized. They might forget things. And they can really struggle with following directions, completing tasks, and so much more in kind of that area. Those kids may be struggling to bathe themselves at home. They might, their parents might complain of, I have to tell them all the time to take a bath or to wipe after using the bathroom. And that might be something teachers hear, but it might not. I think it's important for teachers to know because it really ties in to so much that they could be experiencing in the classroom. So if you're seeing a kid who may be struggling with keeping up with their things, always losing their homework or their pencils, their backpack is just like a bomb went off in there. If they're struggling with completing their tasks, I would reach out to the parents and see what home life is like for the kiddo. See what they can do independently. When executive functioning skills are an issue, with their personal care, usually it's, they don't know how to sequence steps. So to get into the shower, you need to be able to take off your clothes, make sure the water's turned on, the shower's turned on, not the bathtub faucet, the water's at the right temperature. You need to get your body wet first, then put the soap in your hand, then put it on your hair. There's so many steps that we take for granted. And if a kid can't, prioritize and sequence those steps, they're not going to be able to do it. It's not their fault that they're not taking a shower. Right. They're not being lazy. It is, they're having trouble with their executive functionings. And I think a lot of attention is given to preschool and kindergarten speech and language skills, which is very good and important because that's when we need to get in there. But I think it's time that, especially with COVID and a lot of school being more virtual now, to really pick up on those kids that are struggling with those executive functioning skills. They're the ones that are going to struggle in middle school and high school, who can't take notes in class, who can't come up with a study plan or a study guide, and they're going to be falling off track pretty quickly the older they get.
Thank you. Can you talk more about International Speech Path and the services you're able to provide to students and families and teachers?
Yes. My age range of specialty is birth to elementary school. That's where I've mostly worked in my career. For younger children or students who struggle to sit in front of a computer, my therapy is 100% parent coaching. I don't want to be the interactor with the kid. I want the parent to be interacting and I'm communicating 100% with the parent. I have found that so many parents don't know how to play or interact with their kids, not to their fault. It's just not a skill that they have. You know, they're focused on their job, or maybe they didn't have a lot of siblings growing up, so they don't really know how to do that. So I take it as my job is to teach them how to interact with their kids to elicit those language skills. And for older students who are able to sit in front of the computer, our sessions are directly one-on-one therapy. So kids that, you know, are working on speech sounds, that's definitely going to be a one-on-one type of therapy. However, I don't like kids just sitting still for 30 minutes. So I try to incorporate a lot of movement. I like them to show me their toys. I get up, I move around my house and show them my toys. And we try to get some interaction in that way. Especially when schools are virtual, I think it's important that we get up and move around as much as we can. For all students, I want to be in direct contact with teachers so that they know how they're doing in class. And this obviously relies on parents' permission. And sometimes parents don't necessarily like that. They might feel that it might look badly on the student if they're getting outside help. Maybe they like to keep things private, and that's completely up to the parent. And I'm respectful of that decision, of course. We all have our right to privacy. But if I can be a part of the education team, I love that because I can share progress and see the progress that's happening in the class. And after each session, I send a note to the parents stating what goals were addressed, how I addressed them, and then the data I collected on those goals. And my preference would be that teachers could see that too. But again, you know, based on if the parents approve of that.
Yeah.
I think the another important thing that I try to bring to the table is to always be in tune with the child and be very empathetic. Some days I have 7-year-olds who will literally like hide from the camera. So they don't want to be there. And I get it. Those days, therapy focuses on connection. I want to connect. Connection versus compliance. I don't want them sitting in front of the computer because I said, come sit down. We got to do these 10 words. So by focusing on connection, once I can engage with the student, I try to tie in my therapy goals with no demands. So what the student needs in our 30 minutes is not to master the R sound. The student needs somebody to recognize and verbalize that they have a lot going on. Once I can make that connection, I can identify target words in our conversation. So all of a sudden we're practicing the R sound, but there's no demands placed on the child. We're not going to do 10 repetitions of that R word, but we're going to have a conversation focused on empathy that encompasses things that have the R word in it. So we're still getting that practice in, but that student feels heard and loved and respected. And I think that's what so many of our kids need at this time in our lives.
Right. I couldn't agree more with you, Carla, on that point. And I really appreciate you mentioning the empathy piece, because I think it's so essential when we come to these types of teletherapy situations or even teachers online learning, you know, to just kind of test the temperature of how the kids are feeling that day and then making those micro adjustments to the plan that they're about to move forward teaching. So Carla, moving forward, would you be willing to share with us a suggestion for what teachers could read, watch, or listen to in order to learn more about language development?
Yeah, there are so many resources online. I actually love YouTube as a good source. I think for teachers, at least for me in a busy life, plugging in my headphones and listening to a video versus sitting down and reading an article is just a little bit more reasonable. I can do the dishes while listening to something. I would just caution to make sure that the videos you watch are provided by accredited institutions or certified speech therapists. I do think sometimes watching videos from a parent's perspective is good because you do get that different perspective. I would watch it or listen to it just for that though, not for, you know, necessarily clinical information. They might be providing accurate information, but just to make sure that you're learning accurately, I would focus more on the accredited institutions. Online, I would go to the American Speech Language Hearing Association. We call it ASHA, A-S-H-A. And the website is ASHA.org. This organization in the United States is what accredits the speech therapists. So this is our big board. This is our big organization. Without them, we could not practice speech therapy. They have a search box. So you just type in anything that you're curious about and you'll only get research-based articles. There's also a list of providers on there too. So you can just Google, or I'm sorry, in the search box, just look up whatever speech therapist and whatever area you need them to be in. You can look that up. I think that's going to be your best bet. They have some very good resources that are not so academic. So they have some like really good charts on speech sounds. So when you should expect certain sounds at what ages. There are also some good ones on Pinterest too. As long as on the graph or chart, you can see that it's coming from like a university or something, you could do that. I personally have several diagrams and charts on my wall for different phonological processes and speech sounds. So if I come across the student, I'm like, ooh, that sound, I think it's borderline when he should have it. I can just look at it really easily. That might be something that I would recommend to, especially the teachers of younger students, maybe having it on their desk just taped on their desk somewhere or near their computer. That way, when they hear students, they can kind of just reference that really quickly. There are other countries that have organizations similar to ASHA. There's the Speech, Language, and Audiology Canada. It's called SAC, S-A-C. And the Royal College of Speech and Language Therapists, RCSLT. Both of those are the equivalent of ASHA, just in other countries. Those would be the areas, those would be the places I would go to if you have a specific question or concern about a student. If that kind of validates your concerns, then I would reach out to a speech therapist to maybe get a screening for the child. And that could take like 10 minutes. And the speech therapist could say, I think they're probably going to be fine. There's no need for an evaluation just yet. Or they could say, yeah, we need to go ahead and do a full evaluation to see kind of what's going on.
Wow, Carla, this is great information. It's so informative, and I think it'll really help teachers when they encounter students that have, you know, a speech and a language delay or disorder. We really want to thank you very much for joining us today. We appreciated getting to hear from you about speech and language delays and disorders, as well as getting to know more about what you do to support families. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much. I love that you guys are doing this. It has been such a wonderful journey meeting teachers across the world who are so dedicated to inclusivity and empathy among students who learn differently or just struggling in life right now, as so many of us are. So thank you guys for doing this.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Inclusive Ed from the QSI Learning Support Team.
Special thanks goes to our guests for taking time to share their knowledge, skills, and mindsets.
We look forward to sharing our next podcast, where we'll feature a new guest and hear about another aspect of inclusive practices for students with learning support needs.